Still can't believe it, Carmi. I can't. That it happened, and that it happened to that extent, and I'm still here. Hey, thanks to you. Yeah. Wow. Incredible.
Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show. Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Green Room Golf Course podcast. I'm due to fly out to Royal Port Rush tomorrow to join the members of the Bigger Open support team for what is set to be four incredible days of fun on the Northern Irish coast. I absolutely love the Open, and it's brilliant that the home greenkeeping team are always recognised for the years of dedication they put into hosting the event. Members of the Open support team from Bigger come from all over the UK and even further afield, including America and East Asia this year. They help maintain the course for the duration of the Open, and they're ordinary greenkeepers from ordinary golf courses, but they get to go inside the ropes and join the official party that accompanies each match. They get a money can't buy view of the action, and all we ask in return is that they look sharp, represent the association and greenkeepers in a positive way, and make sure the bunkers are looking spot on. Keep an eye out for us throughout the weekend and show your support for the team on Twitter by using the hashtag OpenSupportTeam. Before I go, however, we've got something quite important for you this week in the podcast. The issue of the availability of portable defibrillators on golf courses is one that's received a large amount of publicity in recent years, ever since Bernard Gallagher had his life saved using one on the course. So many golf courses have that one hole that the locals refer to as Cardiac Hill, but for many golfers that joke has become a reality, and it's a sad fact that incidents on the golf course are a fact of life and death. They have a defibrillator at Hickleton near Doncaster, and no one is more thankful for that than John Blackburn. In September last year, John was playing in the club's Senior Open when he suffered a severe heart attack on the first hole. Over the next few hours, his heart stopped and he effectively died at least five times. Luckily, however, the club's greenkeeper, Carl Flavelle, is a trained first aider, and the club had installed a defibrillator a few years earlier. Carl was able to use the equipment to get John's heart started over and over until an ambulance arrived on the scene. Last week, almost a year since the incident took place, John and Carl were reunited at Hickleton and they invited me along for a chat. If your golf course doesn't have a portable defibrillator on site yet, you're going to want to listen to this one.
I was a PE teacher, and I used to do a lot of coaching. And then I lost my wife, and so I'd never played golf until I was 67.
Wow!
It had not come into the, yeah, never interested me. And then lost my wife. I run first year, I run too much, and won quite a few races in my age group. And
run.
Run, yeah.
Oh, you run as well?
In competition, yeah. I'd always trained. Okay. Always trained. And right. Always trained all my life. I used to be a semi-professional footballer, yeah. Tennis coach, managed football teams, PE teacher, never drunk a lot, correct lifestyle, big thing, we're losing my wife. And right. I think that particular month, on the 7th of September, it had been my golden wedding. That upset me. Then, day after the heart attack, actually, my wife had been passed away for 7 years. And I think that built up. Subconsciously, it must have come. Yeah. Well, as I say, should have been his golden wedding anniversary. My birthday, 2 days afterwards, my wife had been passed away 7 years, you know,
yeah. And
I think there were a build up of that, really. Not that I knew about it, or in fact, I walking up, the guy I played with, Well, I didn't know until I came here, was Steve Cammett. I played with him the year before. I used to do a bit of coaching at Scunny United when Alan Clark was here, and Cammy used to be centre forward. Real player. You know, I mean, he's probably still leading goal scorer for Scunny United. He's be about 60 now. So I'd only seen him year before here, and I hadn't seen him for a year, and we're walking on. I said, "You're looking well, John," he says, and shook my hand, and we're walking up. I says, "Yeah, I'm playing really well." And 5 minutes later, I teed off. Yeah. I hit my second ball. Woke up on life support in hospital.
Is that what you remember from the day?
That's all.
Wow.
I remember going down to mark my ball on the green, and that were it. Not a thing. Not a warning. Nothing.
And was the pain?
Was the no pain? No pain, nothing. No nothing.
Were it actually a cardiac arrest you had?
No. I mean, I don't faint. I don't... nothing happens to me like that because I've always looked after myself. You know, I've always...
Yeah.
As I say, when I were even at college, I mean, I was 26 then, lads would go down to pub PE, lads, I'd go and play squash.
Mm.
You know, I was very much, and I don't know why, me and my brother both same, and my dad were a minor, and he were either at work or at club, you know, and then just me and my brother, and we both went on to be PE teachers.
Yeah. Well, you're not doing us any favours in trying to promote golf as a healthy sport, if you're saying you played all these other things, and then as soon as you took up golf, you had a heart attack. That's not helping anybody.
Well, I'd said to my son in the village, I said, "Look, I'm running, I'm cycling, I'm playing tennis and golf. If anything happens while I'm out doing, cycling, running, jogging, you know, I've done it while while I'm doing something I enjoy." Never thinking of golf.
Mm.
I never. In fact, I'd come off a golf course and blokes say, "Oh, I'm knackered," and I'd go and play a tennis match and think what they're on about.
Yeah.
That was when I was 68, 69. So I don't know how it came about.
Okay. So you don't remember anything of it happening. What's the first thing you remember afterwards?
Just waking up in hospital, and I thought I'd just fainted. And two of my sons were there, and my brother, and eventually one of them said, "Well, what day is it?" I said, "Oh, Thursday," you know, because it were a Thursday that we played. I thought I'd just fainted. I think it were 2 days later, you know. I said, So I had no idea. Not a thing.
Not a thing. And what did they say to you? Did they... You know, what did the doctors come in and say to you in terms of what had happened?
Well, not a lot, really. When they did an MRI on me, my heart was completely clear. No furring around it or anything. And they say the vibrators that go and make your heart, I don't know what they're called, technical terms, must have just gone out of sync. And this caused me to go like that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Did they, did they say that you died temporarily? Did that happen, or did they not?
They're just saying I've been a very, very lucky man. You tell me I died a couple of times, didn't you?
Yeah.
And then in the ambulance.
You needed shocking five times. I shocked you five times.
Five times?
Yeah.
Five times.
Blimey.
They
in the ambulance as well, didn't they?
It, when they got you into the ambulance, they said they'd found a very weak pulse.
Yeah.
And you were trying to breathe for yourself, but time was most important. They had to get you to hospital.
Yeah.
And I think your son said they'd lost you a couple of times in the ambulance and brought you back.
Yeah, I know when they transferred me from Doncaster to Sheffield to do the MRI, I was saying to the paramedics, I must have dropped onto this shoulder, but I dropped onto grass, and I said, because this shoulder hurts anyway, he looked up his notes. He said, no, what they did to get drugs into you very quickly, the drill into your bone, and then feed the drugs in that way, very quickly. Now, when we were in hospital, consultant says, what's that? I says, well, that's where they put the drugs in. He says, oh, I'll have a look. He says, usually they put it in your knee, via your knee. And that were it. And this shoulder's when I play tennis now, when I play tennis now, it's really, we're serving. It's a bit painful. But then you can put up with that.
Yeah, I think you can. Yeah.
It's like a compact case, a woman's compact case. And they do it under local, an hour.
What is that?
Defibrillator. It's a pacemaker and defibrillator. There are two wires going down to my heart. Uh-huh. The pacemaker gives you a constant heartbeat. The defibrillator is in there. If my heart stops again, it should kick in.
Right.
And the battery has to be charged every 7 or 8 years. So they say usually they know within a year, you know, whether it has to be changed, which is just a matter of going in, 10-minute job, just change it and out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Would you know if, you know, if it was playing out, if you were having a problem and that was having to kick in, would you know?
The ex-captain at our club said he used to fit them at Sheffield. He was a doctor, retired. And he said, you'll know if it has to kick in.
Right, okay then, yeah.
When you read the spiel on it, they said you might know, but obviously that's to sort of
soften.
But then again, I do, you know, I want to know if it kicks in. But what happened is I was going to Tenerife a few months later. My travel insurance went up 10 times what it was previously. You know, couldn't drive. You have to give up your license with the defibrillator for 6 months. Took me 8 months to get it back. Right, a real pain. This is why I couldn't come over and meet Carl while it was away. Seven or 8 months later.
Where do you live?
I live at a village called Burton Pongstaddo, just north of Scunthorpe.
Ah, okay. Right. Come a little way for today.
So I'd just come, actually. I played here. I'd only played it once, year before, and it's a singles tournament, and I'd just come on my own year before, and I'd never played the course, and I were rubbish. So I wanted to come again, and I prepared my handicap. Were going well, I was playing well, and I wanted to play it again and play it well, you see. And
so you're looking forward to
I went to this year, it's September the 12th this year. They've gave me a concession this year,
because you didn't even finish the first hole.
I've got to have to follow in mind.
I sent my phone with me.
Fair enough. What's the recovery like afterwards then? You went to Tenerife?
Well, I did, for 3 months, I did next to nothing. I mean, I've been active, you know, I walked and really did nothing. And then, once I got to Tenerife, started practicing the golf again and the tennis again. Mm-hmm. So I had 3 months, end of March, just building things up, practicing, hoping it would help me golf when I started, which it didn't do. And then just last week, it just kicked in where I got it down 0.6. You know, so hopefully it's starting to come again.
Yeah, you're sticking at it.
But you think, why me? Why somebody who's kept themselves fit? In hospital there, I saw big blokes who obviously drunk, and you know, you speak to the nurses, and she says, well, look, there were a lad 27 in that bed there next to you, professional footballer, and he'd had a heart attack, you know, and that's his career finished. So there are things that do happen.
Yeah.
You know, all this about healthy lifestyle. It's completely, well, yeah, not me for suits, yeah. To be honest.
What would you say to, what would you say to Carl?
What can I mean, to be honest, I was telling somebody, I've been over and met you. And I said, I took him some whiskey and a book. He says, well, that's very little for your life, isn't it? And, you know, and that sort of sums it up. What can you do? What can you say? You know, I'm... well, I mean, I just wouldn't be here, would I, Carl? I mean, if it weren't for you.
You've said enough for me. You've said dancing, that's it. That's all I need.
I mean, I couldn't wait to get over and meet him. You know,
what's the best thing you could give somebody? A second crack at life. Huh? And I'm just happy that I'll be able to do it for you.
I still can't believe that it happened to me. That's where I can't... Mm. I mean, I'd have been dead now, you know, if it weren't for you, you know. And I can't believe that I thought, like I said,
it wasn't all down to me. I had a good team behind me that did exactly as I asked them to do. Mm. Even down to going and meeting ambulance and bringing ambulance across course, quickest way, safest way. It just all fell into place. So, you know, it wasn't all on me. Mm. I was just wondering, well, getting the chocks and getting the kiss.
Well, the organisation and the chocks. Yeah, somebody were telling me, didn't the chocks that, is it, you know, gets your heart going?
It stops your heart.
It stops it
and tries to get your body back into sync. It don't get your heart going again, it actually stops your heart so your body can get back into sync.
Yeah.
And then it's the CPR that restarts the
really?
Heart.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I didn't realise they didn't do mouth to mouth now.
Yeah, no tongues.
Yeah.
Birthday kiss.
Yeah.
You know, I still, if I sit down and think about it too much, it hurts, really.
You know, that's the biggest thing for me. I mean, it didn't really sink in until I saw a photo of you in Tenerife. And I thought, yeah, I've done that.
Yeah, well, to me, when I tell people, you know, some of people I've been over and met you, and I says, do you know, he couldn't take his eyes off me. I said, not that he fancied it. I said, he couldn't take his eyes off me because last time he'd looked into me, I were dead. Mm-hmm. You said that, didn't you? You know, I said, your eyes were open.
But I wasn't going to give up on you.
No.
There was someone inside that just said, I mean, you're not supposed to give up on anybody until a paramedic comes.
Yeah.
But there was no way I was giving up on you. To me, I didn't think you were dead. I was just keeping you there.
I can't believe I'm alive. I can't believe I were dead. You know, I can't. You know, it happens, well, mind you, I lost my wife. It happens to other people. Hmm. That's what you think. You know, it happens to blokes who haven't looked after themselves. That's what you think.
Yeah.
But then again, you see, my wife went with cancer 5 months from start, and we both looked after ourselves and had checks and just like that. And, you know, they were in south of France and it happens to other people.
Well, this is what I'm trying to get across to people. First time I'd ever used a defibrillator. Don't be scared. Don't be scared to get in there and get your hands dirty. You know what I mean? CPR's all well and good, but you've got something like 60%, 70% more chance with a defibrillator than just CPR alone.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And it's timing. Get there quick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Any help is better than no help.
If it had been 10 minutes, that would have been it.
Your brain has started dying.
Yeah, every minute is vital, isn't it? Yeah. It's a good job I won't first tee, isn't it?
I will other side of course. I will pump back 9.
Have you told John the story from your point of view?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I've left gory details out, but I mean, I told him his mates putted around him and things like that.
Sorry?
I told you your mates putted around you, didn't I?
They're carrying on, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
But it were a bad round.
Yeah.
They didn't play well.
Yeah, right. You asked me, didn't you, when we first met you? You asked me what happened.
Oh, right, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd only heard it from Arian.
Yeah.
And his wife, you know, one of my sons and his wife, and what had happened. And so I'd no idea what Carl looked like. He'd got a photograph of me, but I'd no idea what he looked like.
When you come into our Snapchat, I'm looking for Carl, so I know who you are. Come in. Straight away I knew him.
That's brilliant.
But you thought I'd used defibrillator a few times, didn't you?
Yeah,
first time.
Could you tell me, Carl, what's it like to save somebody's life? Like, what, from you get the phone call saying, John's on the floor.
When I get a phone call, it could be out. All I get is somebody's gone down on first green. So from there on in, I'm thinking worst. I'm trying to imagine a scenario that's going to face me.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to the bridge and hit first green, I knew it was bad. We got one of the members, Jeff Fellows, already started CPR on you.
Right.
So I knew it was bad. I mean, I jumped on my machine, it was still going.
Yeah.
I was that quick to him. And then I looked at him, I'd asked major questions. Who are you? What's happened? Made sure, I've got to do a risk assessment in my head before I even reach you. Whether it's safe for me to do first aid on you.
Mm-hmm.
I could see defibrillator had already been took down there, so I thought, hey, we only a chance here. I got to you, just adjusted your pads a little bit, because someone were coming off, took over to CPR. Unfortunately, I had to break your ribs to get deep enough, with chest compressions. I felt them go. and then it went down to defibrillator then.
I didn't know you'd done that, but just in hospital, I said, oh, I'm a bit sore here. And nobody told me, until I met you again, that I'd got some broken ribs. You know, I thought it was just...
Yeah, well, your son told me, apparently, I don't know if you remember, you were complaining in hospital about some sore ribs.
Hmm.
And doctor said if I had brought your ribs, you wouldn't be here.
Really?
Yeah, told your son that. So that's what your son was telling me. Anyway... As soon as we started with CPR and everything, there's no time to think.
Mm.
Adrenaline kicks in. You're a first aider and that's it. You start telling people, I mean, as well as looking after you, I had to get a team of people to every exit that we've got, an entrance, ready for an ambulance. I've got to get an ambulance to you. And all this is going through my mind while I'm trying to sort you out. I'm still making sure whether your pads are on all right and whether I'm blowing, doing CPR, I'm getting your life-saving breaths correctly. You know what I mean? When I shock you, I've got to make sure everybody's away and nobody's touching you. You know what I mean? I'm looking for any life in your eyes, your pupils, all that. It's a big thing. And then basically, it's just let defibrillator take over. The defibrillator will tell you what to do. As I showed you, I took you through a demo on defib. It tells you to shock, stand clear, shock him, push, press button. You jump up your air, and then it'll say, carry on with CPR. So then I give you two life-saving breaths, carry on with CPR.
Is it that one?
Yeah. Boom, 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 boom.
Very quickly, isn't it?
Yeah, very quickly. You know Nelly the Elephant?
Mm-hmm.
Nelly the Elephant. Well, that's why I sing while I'm doing CPR.
Right.
Nearly the elephant packed a trunk and said goodbye to the circus. Mm. Off she went with a trumpety trump, trump, trump.
Really?
Yeah. There's loads of different songs in Baby Shark now, isn't there? Yeah, that's what they're learning in school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can't sing that song, so I don't know. but basically then it would just leave it to defibrillator until ambulancemen came, paramedics, and then they took over. I transferred the information that I knew to them, and they put you on their defibrillator. And away
So defibrillator just shocks you though, doesn't it?
You call agnostic breathing. I think it's agnostic. I've never pronounced it. And that's where you were not breathing for yourself. I think it's your body. I'm not going to go too far into it because I'm not medically minded that way. But it's not real breathing. People think that you're breathing for yourself and you're not. It's not real breathing. That. Mm. But yeah, like I said, as soon as you go into the ambulance, and you're there a good hour, it would just time them. Get you to hospital as quick as we can.
They were saying it was very lucky that you were the last group of where you'd held everything up during the day.
I know it were a 12 o'clock start.
Well, I had just booked afternoon off.
Had you really?
But as far as defibrillator is concerned, everybody gets to know it. It's so easy. Mm. I don't know why people are scared. I was talking to a nurse from Barnsley Hospital, who I know well, and she was saying to me, she says, we have these defibrillators at work, hospital. She says, I use them all day long. She says, but I'm scared to use a portable defibrillator. Mm. I said, well, that's interesting. Why? She says, I don't know, I'm just scared to use it. Well, yeah. All right. They're so simple. You can't know him.
Who got the defibrillator on site?
I'm thinking it was our assistant professional, I think, Jack Lee.
Yeah. How long have you had it here?
2 or 3 years.
So it's been there 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
And had it been used?
No.
No.
No. They've got a little bulb on them. You check it periodically, and they tell you whether it needs charging or whether it's still fully charged. And when you open it up, it's got like a petrol gauge, if you like, and it tells you how many charges are left in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But as soon as this with John happened, we got a new one.
Oh, okay.
So,
So he pushed to have it, and it sat there idle, but when it was needed, it was great that it was there.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I've been a first aider 18 years this year, and up until John, it was the first time I needed it, first time I used it. But we don't had it a few years, like 17 years ago, when I'd lost somebody else who had a brain hemorrhage on first tee. You know what I mean? It would have been handed to him then, but he once brought him back.
Yeah.
But just knowing that it's there, it's just... I'm trying to get another one on here, actually. Another defibrillator.
You're going to put it out on the course somewhere?
It's either going to be out on course, or it's going to be on my machine.
Yeah.
So I can get to it straight. They're on about me carrying one constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever I go, if I can go straight to it, and they don't need anybody chasing about, they can be getting on my other stuff, such as ambulances and things like that.
Yeah.
So,
well, can't believe you're talking about me.
Sorry.
You know, it's like somebody else. It's
Well, you weren't there, were you? You know, so it doesn't feel like it's you.
Yeah. But I didn't see anything either. I didn't see any fairy lights.
You were grey and cold.
Really?
Yeah.
So what would you say to other golf clubs that don't have a defibrillator?
Get one.
Yeah?
Get one. Like I say, it is the difference between life and death. CPR alone, that's all well and good. But how can I put it? If ambulance is stuck in traffic and you were there just doing CPR for 25, 30 minutes, with defibrillator there,
it can make
a very, very big proof.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's proof what a defibrillator can do.
Yeah, and I feel as fit. I've been, only thing I've got to pick up again now is my running. The weather's not been great for it, but otherwise, I mean, like Thursday, Wednesday's a long day down at Cheltenham, play some tennis and back, and then Thursday, golf and tennis, and I'm just now carrying on as I was, which is 9 or 10 months ago, which I wouldn't have been able,
Well, like I said, since John, that defibrillator has been out another twice.
Yeah.
So.
Really? Twice?
Yeah. First time it went out after you, I didn't have to use it. It just basically fainted. So, packed him off to hospital. That went cardiac ill. And then the last time I had to use it, unfortunately, blood would have fluid flow. I was telling it out. So, I could have plugged him into National Grid, he wouldn't come back. but I still used it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'd never get up until 5 minutes gone. So it was still getting used.
And this cardiac ill, I mean, I mentioned, you know, Eccleton, and they all going about cardiac ill.
Yeah.
I can remember a hill first time I played, Hornaton, and it was like that,
Well, as Carl said, every course has got cardiac ill.
Yeah.
But you, downhill for the first, so you've got no excuses.
No, I know. I just can't understand it. I couldn't understand.
There's so many ways in which a golf club, whether you're 9-0 or pitch and putt or kiddies golf club, you know what I mean? There's so many ways in which you can afford a defibrillator. Mm-hmm. I mean, your captain's charity could pay for it in 1 year.
Yeah.
Our ladies section paid for ours. So, you know what I mean? You could have a charity event just for a defibrillator. It's worth every penny.
Our playing tennis a few months ago, and one of the guys, he has a garden centre. And I was telling him about it, you know, and it's, you know, I thought, should we get one, like, you know? I said, and garden centres, they're all old people that go out, you know, most of the time. And he says, yeah, definitely, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've got a lot of first aiders here. I think there's about a dozen of us. And I think two people talk, there's only two that comfortably use defibrillator. Everybody else is scared. Mm. Don't be scared. Get in there. Get it used. You know what I mean? You've done it on a dummy, so why? You know what I mean? That dummy's cold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you're not going to hurt none.
Just the difference between you being scared and saving somebody's life, it shouldn't even come into the equation, should it?
No. Yeah. Like I keep saying, as long as you're doing something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I showed you, you open a defibrillator up, it shows you, there's little pictures while we're talking to you, which pad to put with you. You know what I mean? And then that's it. All you've got to do then is your CPR and let defibrillator do work.
That's how far you're going into it with CPR, is it?
But like I said, even if it's wrong, it's helping. You know what I mean? I mean, that sounds contradictive. But while ever you were getting some chest compressions into it and a couple of breaths, it might not be going all the way, but it's getting some oxygen.
Mm.
My body. So, even if you were a bloke that's on your phone talking to ambulance, it's help. And get as many people as you can in to help you. If you need to call a member, some members off at Next Green to help you, get them up. You know what I mean?
Thank you very much for sharing your story. That's really interesting. So, thank you very much.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.